This is Conducting Business, WQXR's podcast on the classical music industry. I'm Naomi Lewin. Child prodigies are nothing new. Mozart began composing when he was 5, and chess grandmaster Bobby Fischer was a star at 13. Behind me, you are hearing an 11-year-old from Pittsburgh who had one of the biggest classical albums of 2011. Jackie Evancho came to wide public attention on the TV show America's Got Talent, and she has gone on to become a staple of PBS fundraisers and a recording artist whose two albums have collectively sold several million copies. But even as some people celebrate Jackie Evancho's achievements, others are raising questions about how she and other performers her age can sustain a career. How far can and should gifted children be pushed, and what will their future be like? Joining me, three guests: Tim Page, former New York Times and Washington Post music critic, who is now a professor of music and journalism at the University of Southern California. Robert White is an operatic tenor and voice teacher who got his start as a child singer in the 1940s. And Bill Pallant is an artist manager at IMG Artists, where he oversees the careers of many top singers, as well as young up-and-comers. So, I'm going to start with you, Tim Page. What are the problems that you find with the voice that we were just hearing? You just wrote an article about this.
Yeah, I did, and it's inspired quite a lot of angry mail, which has sort of surprised me, because it was actually meant as just a note of concern about what it seems to me is the ruination of a promising voice. What is an 11-year-old girl doing singing the tenor aria, the most famous tenor aria, from
Nessun Dorma, which we just heard?
Yeah. I mean, and just the contortion she's going through to hit the high notes, to scoop to the low notes. I mean, this is the way to ruin a voice. And I just pointed that out as a sort of cautionary warning. Anyone in the room remember Charlotte Church?
Indeed.
She was pushed this way about 10 years ago. She had these fierce, sort of sexless high notes, and it was obvious to any of us who know anything about the voice that it was a voice that was going to burn out if she kept using it that way. And from what I understand, that's sort of what happened. And I don't think Charlotte Church ever went through the sort of mimicry, almost ventriloquism, that you're listening to when you listen to Evancho. It's very, very sad, and I don't like the way they dress her up. I don't like the way they, you know, promote her as if she's some little beauty queen.
Well, I understand that you got over 600 comments on this. What was the breakdown? More for, more against?
Well, I don't want to sound snobbish here, but basically, I would say probably three quarters were very, very angry, along with maybe a quarter which were very, very supportive.
Angry at you or angry?
Very angry at me.
At you,
very,
for
suggesting very angry
this.
At me. Exactly. And the thing, though, is that, you know, always when I used to get death threats or really crazy mail, it was always the opera people who sent it.
Well, I'm going to turn now to an opera person and ask you, Robert White, what do you make of the performance of Jackie Evancho and others before her, like Charlotte Church?
Well, I having started to sing and to sing with a, if you want to call it, legit type of voice production, just for a lot of good reasons as a child, I'm certainly out there to be supportive as I can to any of these kids that have some kind of gift. But the thing, just like Tim has pointed out so well, it's the exploitation on the one hand by the parents and whoever gets to handle these people and can lead them down the wrong paths. And then also what the audience is expecting of them. Very often it's an audience, in all due respect, but that really has not spent much time dealing with the fine points of really good bel canto singing, and they don't know what the heck they're listening to. And so anything that sounds like a pastiche and an imitation of operatic singing, you know, they start, you hear it, they start clapping when the first note gets, you know, about an E above middle C, and there's some tone in it. The audience goes mad, and those America's Got Talent or Britain's Got Talent or Australia. And it's just a shame, because the down market aspect of all of that is what can kill a really good talent.
Well, there are a lot of child stars in pop culture. Is the problem that she is being presented as a full-blown opera singer?
Well, because she's not. I mean, she's not a full-blown opera. She couldn't possibly be for a good number of years. And if she keeps doing the way they're doing it, where she swallows a song to make this artificial operatic, quote-unquote, voice, it's not going to develop. It's going to be in some kind of real trouble, and the poor gal will give it up. I hope in that case, God forbid it should happen, but that she's put away some money and that the parents haven't spent it all.
You were a child star once. Does anything about the phenomenon of Jackie Evancho ring true to you?
Well, yes and no. I mean, when I did it, I was very lucky. First of all, I was born in a family of singers, and my father was a very successful and well-known tenor in the earliest days of radio. And he got me going and singing. I was just imitating him and his recordings and all of the 4,000 John McCormick records in our house. So I got on a kid's show with Milton Cross and a lot of other kid singers and performers. And we were just there, but we were always still considered young singers. So even though if I had a recording of me in one of those big shows with Bing Crosby or Fred.
We've got that recording now. Let's listen to a little bit of it.
At last I've found thee, and I know at last the secret of it all. On the longing, striving, seeking, waiting, yearning, the burning hopes, the joys and idle tears.
Okay, I'm not even going to ask if you knew what the sweet mysteries of life at that point were. You were how old when you were singing this?
Ten,
right.
It's the high end in another line that was the killer. And it shows, it goes into the operatic world right at the end of this, and you'll see then what I was talking about.
Bill, we haven't heard from you yet. Bill Pallant of IMG. IMG represents a number of young artists, and you used to represent Jackie Evancho. What are the particular challenges of managing a career of a child prodigy?
I think that part of the challenge is identifying someone who truly has the gift or the gifts at a very young age, and it's very different. I work specifically with singers, but I think that the gifts found in an instrumentalist can be found at a much earlier age, generally, in an instrumentalist, simply because an opera singer, a quote-unquote opera singer, isn't going to be a developed performer
or instrument
until at least the late 20s, if not early 30s. Someone like a Jackie Evancho or a Charlotte Church, I think, are, in my opinion, more of a cultural phenom as opposed to a true opera singer, because if you put them on the opera stage, they couldn't sing an opera. I don't think that either of them has sung an opera. The same with someone like a Russell Watson, for example, who was not as young when he was discovered as Jackie Evancho, but they titled him an opera singer, but he's not an opera singer.
Well, does somebody like, just age-wise, mm-hmm. how does a child like this handle? I looked at Jackie Evancho's schedule, mm-hmm. and, you know, she's like in three different places in a week.
It's a rigorous,
and she's 11 years old.
It's a rigorous schedule, but I think that the people around her are maintaining a relative balance between the professional side of her and the personal side of her. While I've never heard her in person, I've only heard recordings, people that I do know that have attended her performances do say that she truly is a special and unique person, that she does have a gift of communication, a gift of charisma. And yet they all also in the same breath comment that when she's off the stage, she's a little girl. And she acts like a little girl, a sensible, entertaining little girl. But the professional side of her and the personal side are two very different things.
Well, Might part of that charisma not come from the very carefully chosen material that she sings?
Of course.
I want to play another clip now and have everybody sort of comment on her ability to actually interpret some of that really great operatic literature. This is from America's Got Talent. All right, Tim, you wrote, her interpretation seems little more than imitation, almost ventriloquism, with scarcely any trace of originality. So you go first and comment on what we just heard.
I just think it's awful. I mean, there's nothing organic about it. It's all imitative. She's singing in about, you know, five different ranges there and not at all comfortable except for, a few moments there. There's no sense of interpretation. I mean, get this very talented young girl to a voice teacher, you know, help her so she doesn't keep making these. I mean, everything she's doing with her voice is wrong. Everything.
Okay, now we get to hear from Robert White, the singer and voice teacher.
Well, it's fascinating because I'm on the voice faculty at Juilliard, and we have to each term and year hear the incoming flow of first of CDs, and then the young people come and sing live for us. And often you'll hear something that's not in any way finished yet and able to do any of the particularly demanding arias. But if you hear the germ of something important in a young voice, you go for it and you take them in and you start to train them. But those kids are at the minimum 18 to 20. And here you're dealing with people in their early teens or 11 or something like that. And going along with what Tim said, in all due respect to the young lady that just sang, because her instincts are there and she's trying to do something, but you feel, and I feel it personally as a singer, let alone a teacher, I feel the strain inside, trying to get the voice to sound. Then you have that wrapped up in some of the most gorgeously seductive music ever written on planet Earth, namely Puccini's O Mio Bambino Caro. But we forget that there is something of the principle in that child's gift being burnt up.
Bill?
Absolutely.
I mean, I would like to couch it all and not focus so much on her talent, but hopefully in audience development and put a positive spin on what she represents. She sings to millions and millions and millions and millions of people across the planet, whereas someone like Renee Fleming or Don Upshaw or Piotr Beccala would sing to hundreds of thousands, but doesn't have the scope of reach that someone like Jackie Evancho does, for better or for worse. And that someone listening to Jackie Evancho on America's Got Talent singing this opera aria might, I hope, be sparked into, hey, what's that? That's really pretty. I'd like to know more about this guy, Puccini. How do you pronounce it? Puccini?
Yeah.
Giacomo Puccini? Yeah, right. They would take that kernel, and I don't know whether that's the truth, because I think that, and this is a whole other topic, whether our culture is deep enough to really have the time, commitment, and energy to explore and to learn more, or if we just are going to be sitting in front of the television and being spoon-fed 10-year-old little girls trying to sing opera. But
what or how should she be singing instead at this point?
Oh, that's a good question. Can I jump in here?
Please.
Thank God it's what happened to me. I had this voice that could do all kinds of pretty impressive things vocally as a kid, but I was never expected to do something that was really beyond me. So that I would do, for instance, there was still a tradition left over of the grand ballad tradition. I mean, the great songs that almost are operatic in their own vocal scope. But they were very doable, and those are the things I sang, like the Ah, Sweet Mystery of Life.
You don't think it was a little strange for a 10-year-old to be singing Ah, Sweet Mystery of Life?
Not when I did it. No, thank you.
But, Bobby, I was just listening to your recording, and that's a child singing as a child should sing.
Maybe with some
moments there where there was a little bit of strain, but this is all strain, and maybe she is turning people on to some great music, and obviously that's a good thing. But if this continues, I seriously doubt she's going to be singing much of anything in 10 years.
And I would agree with that.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And if this were being sung by a 30-year-old, no one would pay attention. There is something deeply exploitative about it. You know, I got a lot of people very angry with me when I brought up, you know, the idea of JonBenet Ramsey. But that's what it reminds me
it's
of. It's disgusting. I just have to say.
I wish
Jackie Evancho everything good in the world, and the best thing she could do is take some time out and enjoy her youth and sing for her friends and not try to put on this ridiculous cloak of operatic density.
I just want to say, disclosure here, we did ask Jackie Evancho to join us for this discussion, and we were told that she was unavailable, and we also asked her manager, but we didn't get any response to that request. So mm-hmm.
I wish her all the best. I don't necessarily wish her management all the best.
I think that if I can throw a curve in this, or maybe Bobby can speak to this as well, the idea of a vocal child prodigy, an operatic prodigy, is much more uncommon.
More fraught
than an instrumentalist prodigy. You look at whether, you know, as you mentioned earlier, Mozart or Liszt, but in our own experience, in our own day, people like Evgeny Kissin, Lila Josefowicz,
Midori.
Yo-Yo Ma, Midori, Joshua Bell, Jean-Yves Thibaudet.
Yep.
Tim mentioned this in his article, there is the big difference, and I know this too from being a singer. I was a singer with a good voice. When I was Jackie Evancho's age, I could sing the Queen of the Night aria. Mm-hmm. I wasn't blonde and gorgeous, but I could sing the Queen of the Night aria. And there was another kid who was in school with me who could manufacture an enormous mezzo voice. But she was in junior high school. Mm-hmm. And I was just singing the Queen of the Night aria to amuse myself. But what she was doing was actually destructive. And there is that distinction. And Robert, I would like you to, as a voice professional, how did you navigate the transition?
That's a very good question because my voice never broke. It went from the high boy alto on down through tenor, dum, and into high baritone. And then by about the age of 19 or so, I was back into tenor. And my dad had a great friendship with John McCormick, in fact, I have a letter from James McCormick to my dad, who had just heard me sing on the Fred Allen Show, and he said, I think what you're doing with Bobby's voice is just fine, and you'll shepherd him through the break, which doesn't have to happen. My brother never had the break either. Isn't that interesting?
Hmm.
And neither did Buehrling. And I'm not trying to step into McCormick or Buehrling's shoes. Those were two gigantic voices of mythic proportions of quality. But the same thing, though, the instrument itself was not mistreated ever. And that's why now, at 75, I'm still singing. I'm doing a St. Patrick's Day with the Hartford Symphony of Irish songs that bring me up and down, right up through the highest range and the lowest. And I'm still able to do it.
Okay.
But see, that's the thing. You're still singing. Placido Domingo's still singing.
Darn right.
Pavarotti was singing very beautifully, you know, pretty close to the end of his career.
So is it a tenor thing?
No, it's not a tenor thing at all.
Birgit Nielsen was doing Elektra at 62.
Grace Bunbury still sings.
Lantine.
Elizabeth Soderstrom was singing into her later years. There are still very many world-class singers that into their 70s.
Quaino sang up to 91.
Yeah. Martin Myrtle sang until very late.
Martin Myrtle, yes.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen here unless, you know, people address the situation and, you know, start working with her, you know. And I just wish her all the best. But this is not good. And I'm just glad that there's a Jackie Coogan Act and that the money has to be put away for her for later in her life.
Well, let me throw this out. People have always been fascinated by prodigies. Is the age of YouTube and social media creating more of them?
Can I try to answer quickly?
Please.
I think one of the greatest things that's ever happened in the history of mankind is YouTube, because as I said before, I grew up with lots of recordings in my house, but other kids didn't have them. But today, anyone that has any idea of wanting to hear anyone sing, they have access to everything that was ever recorded. You just put down, if you want to hear Amelita Galicorci, you know,
yep,
you just say that, print the name into YouTube, and there she comes. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. And so kids could use that to keep developing their love of song.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, an awful lot of the there's marvelous music on YouTube, wonderful, wonderful old recordings, and I love it. But there are also all sorts of pictures about, you know, cats fighting with each other, and they're
I
also
love them too.
Yeah, I love them too. And
but they're
bloopers,
not singing
bloopers
Omeo
on TV.
They sound like they are.
How much are the prodigies the product of pushy parents?
I would say that sometimes it's pushy, but I think that at the core, this is maybe open for discussion, they are the children of supportive parents. Supportive maybe in the case of you know, what if we were to go back into the early 1700s, mid-1700s, and see what Mozart Sr. did? Would he have put Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart on Austria's Got Talent?
In a Vienna minute.
Exactly.
Without going into big detail, just think of what parents earlier than that did in the Vatican when they sent their kids off to remain sopranos.
Yes.
Yes,
indeed.
Robert,
if that's exploitative, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell me about your experience? Do you feel that you had a well-rounded enough childhood? Could you do fun things?
Absolutely. I grew up in the South Irish Bronx. You know, played stickball with a ball, in my case, that was given to me by the 1949 Yankees team, and they signed everyone on it. And what did I do? I went out and I played with it in the street. About a month later, $20,000 was down the drain. But it was my childhood.
Dear. Yeah.
I guess that's one way to keep a healthy perspective on this. What else could be done for parents with child prodigies to keep a healthy perspective on their talented children?
I want to say something about child prodigies. You know, even Mozart didn't write really any particularly interesting or memorable music till he was about 19. Let's keep that in mind. True, he was playing all around Europe, and he was a little star, but all of a sudden you get a brand new Mozart when he gets to be about 19. Felix Mendelssohn wrote his greatest masterpiece, in my opinion, at the age of 16. But, you know, the stuff that's done by kids as kids, it remains kid stuff. It just does. Even the most talented kids, it remains kid stuff because it's basically mimicry. And we should remember this when everybody's saying, oh, my God, well, would you have stopped Mozart? Well, Mozart, despite the fact that he was exploited wildly and, you know, child labor laws would be all over him now, also managed to learn and grow and get better. And he was not a performer put in a position of, you know, coming pretty close to ruining his voice every time he was out on a stage.
I want to ask, how much stress does having or managing a child's career put on a family?
Well, I came from an Irish family of five siblings. We were six kids. And I know that there was an element throughout all of that that I was getting all the spotlight treatment by the parents in one way or another. They were decent about it with the others, but they didn't really sing. The one that did have a gorgeous voice was unfortunately involved in an airplane thing as a young Air Force guy, so he was not singing anymore. But it does take its toll, there's no question, because you garner this attention from your parents, from your schoolmates, from everybody, and it's so abnormal. Even mm-hmm. And I didn't feel my situation as too abnormal, only because I was feeling the reflection of a career that my father had already done and was in, you know? So it still comes with a, like the Hope Diamond.
let me say one quick thing about this, too. And one of the reasons why I find the whole prodigy thing really, I can use no other word than immoral. I mean, you want to support these people, but as a working critic for 35 years, I saw young child after young child get engagements, be brought out, and then just discarded as if they were yesterday's rubbish when they got to be about 20, 21, 22. Very few people. I mean, obviously, Midori has done terrifically, Hilary Hahn. There are Yo-Yo Ma. There are people who've managed to do this. But I remember when Midori took a brief time off, I got a call from another person saying, she's the next Midori, meaning that she was younger. And you get into this sort of sick thing when it's where it becomes sort of like how young you are, and it retards the whole idea of growing into a mature adult because your age becomes your enemy, you know? No one cares about what you're doing when you're 30. You know?
Well, let me go back to, we mentioned earlier, Charlotte Church, who was the Jackie Evancho of her day. And then as she got older and went through puberty, she fell off the public radar screen, except for her antics. She really, you know, she went from saying, oh, I'm just another normal little girl with a normal, you know, doing normal things, to what we all remember, the sort of spoiled brat Charlotte Church. What are the risks of burnout or mental health issues or whatever?
Look at Amy Winehouse. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, she's a much greater talent than either of the two people we just mentioned. And, you know, she stops making records at 23 and she's dead at 27.
I think that culturally, we as a society glam onto the hot, young, new, fresh thing. We have a very short attention span. And while I join in the chorus of people in the station right now who are wishing all the best for all of these young vocal prodigies, I think that the long-term horizon for Jackie Evancho, as Charlotte, the same for Charlotte Church, she'll have her moment in the spotlight, and the spotlight bulb will go out, and there will be the next Jackie Evancho on Something's Got Talent.
Well, Jackie Evancho has built her career on television appearances and in places like Las Vegas. However, this being a tough time for a lot of orchestras, some major symphony orchestras have booked her, like the Pittsburgh Symphony. Tim, how much do you think orchestras are going to see this as a good way to make some easy money, and do they risk compromising something in return?
Well, you know, most orchestras do present pop concerts and do present things like
pops,
this. And I mean, orchestras are in trouble. There's no doubt about it. But it doesn't seem to me that it's going to solve any really long-term problems for the orchestra.
But I think that the value of a symphony orchestra booking someone like a Jackie Evancho in our cultural and fiscal climate really is a quick cash injection, because there will be people that come to see her that would not normally buy a ticket to a concert at Heinz Hall or Avery Fisher Hall. And the Pittsburgh Symphony, as an example, would benefit by their perhaps lowering the cultural barometer by booking someone like a Jackie Evancho.
And I think,
but she is also a hometown girl. That is important to remember.
But okay,
you will not see the Berlin Philharmonic booking.
How about
Jackie
the New York
Evancho.
Philharmonic? Do you think?
No chance.
If I may just say that the thing that people also don't realize is that when it is the Pops concert for these kids, supposedly so operatically trained, they have a microphone shoved down their mouth the whole time,
right?
And it has nothing to do with what happens when you see someone standing on an operatic stage, please God, without amplification and letting their voice, you know, get out there into the house.
Or in a recital hall,
Then you have the real thing.
Well, thank you. I think that's a great place to leave this. Thank you all for joining us. This has been Conducting Business, WQXR's podcast series on the music industry. Our guests today were music and journalism professor Tim Page, tenor Robert Bobby White, and artist manager Bill Pallant. This podcast is produced by Brian Wise, and our engineer was Jason Isaac. I'm Naomi Lewin. Thank you so much for listening.